So hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Pulse Podcast, Season 2. I'm very excited to be speaking to our guests today. We have two physician entrepreneurs, Raji Akila and Linda Ciavarelli. The topic of today's discussion is emerging technology and its role in improving health education. I'm your host, Dr. Maida Fine, and let's just start at the basics. Welcome, Linda, Raji, to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Please introduce yourselves. Tell me a little bit about your background. What is your startup about, and how did you get into entrepreneurship?
I'll let Linda go first.
Thank you. So first off, thank you again, Maida and Raji, for being here. It's such an honor to be on this podcast. I really look up to what it is that you guys are both doing. So it's really fantastic. My name is Dr. Linda Ciavarelli. I am a physician. I've been in private practice for 20 years and have been struggling with seeing the downstream effects of low health literacy in my patient population. Imagine being told that you're going to have an amputation of your leg. And this is a conversation that is had quite often in our practice. And unfortunately, then learning that it could have been prevented. That's where we are in the immersive technology space. We're creating virtual reality patient educational materials using virtual reality, and then eventually expanding into potentially augmented reality and mixed reality.
Awesome. What about you, Raji? You're on mute.
Yes. So I'm Raji. I'm a physician here in Florida. I sit on the board of advisors for a global network of doctors driving innovation in the medical field, Global Health Impact Network. I'm also a key opinion leader for the American College of Regenerative Medicine. And currently I'm working on a startup called MedEd Cloud. MedEd Cloud is essentially a platform that's going to redefine the future of medical education and training. When I entered medical school, I noticed that there were some significant problems that were present, not only from fundamental gaps inside of our curriculum, but on an entire systems approach with, the student resources, lack of support, various issues across the entire journey of going from day one of medical school, walking across graduation stage. And so I took on this journey post-graduation, and I've come across some very amazing people and working on this project. And so hence the reason why I'm here today. Thank you.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for your introductions. And, so let's just dive right in. So when we hear the term emerging technology, it kind of sounds like it's something upcoming. It kind of sounds like something new, not quite here yet. And it might even take some time to require or attain that maturity in terms of adoption, implementation, acceptance. But as individuals who are deeply involved in this space, I wanted to ask, how has your experience been thus far? And what potential do you see in terms of not only acceptance, but transforming the health education and the patient education space? So the floor is open, whoever wants to go first. Linda, do you want to continue?
Yeah, so I'm sure that Raji had a lot to say on that subject, and me as well. And actually, considering his work on a global stage, probably, really excited to hear what he has to say about that. Being a part of emerging technology is incredibly exciting. I think where Raji was probably going, I think we've all imagined, seen forward motion in the healthcare industry in regards to adoption of technology on a pace since the COVID-19 emergency. We haven't really had the opportunity to expand this fast in this way. And so what it's allowed people to do is start to imagine other ways. We never imagined we'd be able to see as many of our doctors virtually as we could emergency part of the pandemic. And, now we're sort of imagining, how else can we leverage technology to solve some of the problems that we have? And that's the space that we're in. We see kind of three challenges. The first is adoption. How do we get people into these immersive technology or emerging technology to begin with? You know, who has a headset? The second piece is reach. And, you know, finding people that have the access to the technology is incredibly important to make sure that we're not leaving more people behind. That's already a big challenge in healthcare. And a third is validation. How do we prove that these things work? You know, it's early. It's early. Now, we're lucky that there have been pioneers, to name a few, certainly in healthcare and in immersive technology, including Dr. Walter Greenleaf at Stanford and Skip Rizzo. These are two of the giants that have been doing this for decades. And so building on the amazing amount of work that they've already done in validating these emerging technologies as new and exciting and impactful ways in healthcare is both a challenge and an opportunity.
No, absolutely. I'm so glad that you talked about these challenges, and so ironic that we're talking about leveraging technology and just, you know, we come across technical glitches all the time. I hope Raji is able to join back. I would love to pick his mind. I know he's just as passionate as you are about these things. But the challenges that you mentioned, and I remember the last time we talked, you were in your initial phases of the startup, and I remember how passionate you were about patient education. And not too long ago, I saw that House Call VR did a LinkedIn live session from inside a virtual pancreas. And so while I couldn't make it to the live session, I did watch the replay. I thought it was amazing. And so first of all, just tell me a little bit about what the response was like. And then what challenges did you come across just in getting that set up? Because it's so new. It's such a new approach.
No, I'm so glad that you could watch it on LinkedIn, and it is on the House Call VR a LinkedIn page if anyone's interested. We also have a YouTube channel and all the normal socials. So just to take a little bit of a step back, your House Call VR is focused on using immersive technology for patient education, and we see engagement as a big part of that. And the way that we're doing this engagement is through social virtual reality, leveraging places where people already are. You know, one of the challenges we talked about adoption is how do you get, in our industry, how do you get virtual reality headsets to people? Well, we decided to go where people who already have virtual reality headsets are and give them something to do and maybe something that could enrich them in some way. We've done this on social virtual reality platforms. The event you're talking about was created in a social virtual reality platform. We created a very lo-fi, three-dimensional pancreas where people could go into. We had a diabetes reversal expert, Dr. Michael Danziger from Tufts University there talking. This is a live public event. The only limitation was the number of people that could actually be in the space, which is still fairly limited right now, but we see that expanding. And a big part of why we decided to do the event to live stream it so that it could be interacted with for people who didn't have access. Some of the challenges, like I said, you know, reach. How do we reach people who don't have access to the technology, who don't have access to a head-mounted display or a virtual reality headset? And we really see the solution for that is through bridging technologies like live streaming to LinkedIn, to Facebook and other social media so that people who don't necessarily have access can still interact and see it. The response was really overwhelming. It was quite exciting. We are going to be hosting another lecture in April, hopefully. We're in the process of finalizing that with an addiction specialist who's going to be talking actually from inside of a virtual reality brain. So if you're interested in that, we'll be inside of the dopamine reward center. And that will be a live lecture. So I hope you can make it in avatar form or watch along on our LinkedIn.
Amazing. Thank you for that. So glad to have you back, Raji. Do you want to continue with what you were saying?
Sorry, it crashed on me and gave an error message. I had to restart it. What I was originally saying was that there was a pre-COVID, often these things were seen as not an option or something that wasn't feasible with remote patient monitoring, telemedicine services, and so forth. But we've seen an exponential explosion in technology post-COVID, and now the standard is, remote patient monitoring, telemedicine with some of these certain conditions, especially as we have this burden on our healthcare industry currently. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I remember, the last time we talked, I know that you're very passionate and very focused on improving existing loopholes and cracks in the system, in the existing medical education system. And I just wanted to know, and I wanted to pick your brain, what are some of the specific challenges that, or some of the specific loopholes that you think need fixing, and how can you leverage technology to fix those issues?
Yeah, from a perspective of a educational / training system, there's a high layer of complexities that are present in the medical education system. One of the biggest challenges is the internal resistance to change. I believe it was William Osler that said something to the effect of be neither the first nor the last to adopt to like a new procedure, new, type of technology or whatnot, something along those lines. But basically what that equated to was this chilling effect throughout the medical industry. And granted, if you move too fast, patients get killed. But if you move too slow, patients get harmed. So there's been this, sense of bureaucracy politics, but then also on top of that, there's many complexities and many stakeholders in the various levels of medical education. You have organizational levels, you have institutional levels, and within each respective curriculum, there's nuances. Some are doing some components better. Others are doing, a little bit, could be improved. But it's interesting to see these newer technologies with, gamification of the medical training space. And it creates this, element of addiction, so to speak. And, when you say addiction, it kind of puts it in a bad sense, but, if it's a positive, if there's a positive outcome, so it makes it enjoyable, so to speak, that's a good thing. There's also the increase of virtual patient encounters that we're now able to create digital environments and, outpatient office settings that you can simulate any type of patient scenario in an office setting now, and then be in a worry-free zone where, if you mess up, it's okay. It's actually a good thing you mess up in that environment. So you learn from it. And the end result is a patient doesn't die because of that mess up. So I think some of these technologies remove some of the burden of failure and the outcomes that can result from it. So.
Do you want to add to that, Linda?
No, I just really love that point. The idea of leveraging these technologies in ways that haven't been done yet. We as humans, we started communicating with each other through language, and then we moved to two-dimensional representations, drawings on cave walls, and now we're still communicating with each other in two dimensions. So even right now, we're communicating with each other in a two-dimensional interface. And just to expand a little bit, what Raji said was, if we can take this three-dimensional way of transferring information and knowledge, and then on top of it to layer the social aspect, we know we learn better with our peers. When we learn with our peers, we understand. And we saw that, those of us with school-age children, during the quarantine period of the pandemic, really saw the detrimental effects. Yes, the teacher was still there, still teaching our kids, but they weren't in a social environment and they were in a two-dimensional environment. And so that's just not as conducive to learning. So the idea of leveraging this entirely new way of transferring information is so incredibly exciting. And I think that's that not just in healthcare as an industry, but really in any industry. I think that's what makes the whole idea of the metaverse, whatever it is that we end up deciding that means, to be, you know, so incredibly impactful.
No, great. And but I just wanted to touch on, you know, and how Raji so rightly mentioned resistance to change. And I know that the older physician cohort, they're so used to doing things a particular way that I think that's where you see the most resistance. And so I wanted to ask both of you, when you pitch your ideas, or when you try to get partners on board, or maybe investors on board, what has the response been like? Are they completely like immediately on board? Are they skeptical? Or do they wait? Do they ask for like a proof of concept? What has that reaction been like?
I'm a little earlier in my journey, so I'll jump in, and because I think my answer will probably be shorter than Raji's. I will say initially people are generally skeptical, but once you can actually show them what this is like, when they can actually experience this amazing interface that we've built specifically in virtual reality, I find that it actually disarms people. It allows them to see the problem in a new way. And in a lot of ways, you know, people just, oh, you know, patient education, it just hasn't really been prioritized from our perspective. But to really, it allows people to get really engaged. And I found that people get incredibly excited because they start to see new possibilities, like these old problems we deal with every day and we thought we couldn't really tackle them or we really didn't know how. Now, all of a sudden, there's this technology. So the technology is just the tool. It's not the answer. It's just the tool. It gives us an opportunity to have this conversation. Again, it's an old problem that we're solving. And I think that Raji is solving, obviously, the technology is beside the point. So that's where I find people actually get really excited and start to imagine, oh my gosh, we could use it like this and we could use it like this. So that for us that's generally been the way that people have responded.
Go ahead, Raji.
I kind of got, you know, to that tool. People are on either two sides of the camp. When it comes to these newer technologies, you know, with artificial intelligence, for instance, you know, there's this whole debate between whether artificial intelligence will replace physicians or artificial intelligence will essentially empower physicians. And, you know, of course, every new technology needs a healthy dialogue with the people who are in support and the people who are against. Because when you respectfully sit down at a table together and two sides of the camp and you lay out your, you know, kind of points and validation, you start to see things from multiple angles and potential pitfalls. So, you know, a technology like this has significant impact in the ability to actually enact drastic change. But we also have to realize that there are potential pitfalls just with anything. And so, we have to work together to shape it in the best way forward, because ultimately, whether you want it to happen or not, it's going to happen. Now it becomes a matter of being a part of the situation and guiding it versus resistance to it. And then, you know, essentially being out of the loop. And it's not that AI is going to replace doctors. It's doctors that are leveraging AI are going to replace doctors that are not leveraging AI. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, this change, you know, I'll admit, you know, everyone is comfortable with keeping things the same because, you know, you fall into a routine, you know, you don't step outside of the box, you don't put yourself at any type of risk, and you just keep things the way they are because that's how they've always been. And, you know, the thing with change that needs to happen, though, is, you know, one of the concerns that some schools may have, and I've heard this before, is they begin to worry, are you trying to replace us just because it's so different? There's never been a point in human history as big as this with, you know, we have different revolutions and so forth. But the artificial intelligence revolution is probably one of the biggest points in human history that we have. And we are at a true inflection point where we have the opportunity to actually change broken systems. And if done correctly, it can have significant impacts for humanity moving forward for future generations. The problem is, if we do not take this opportunity now in this revolution, we would have to wait till something equivalent to artificial intelligence, a new revolution occurs, where another opportunity to enact this type of change. And we don't know how long that will be before the next wave of that. So, it's something that needs to happen. And what we're doing is we're actually working with MedEd Cloud. We're working to empower universities, medical schools to actually improve outcomes for their students, remove some of the burden from the administrative side, allow them to reallocate their human resources and capital and so forth around the school to be more efficient. And ultimately providing a much better experience than what it is today now. There's an appetite for change. If you go on any LinkedIn post or any Reddit thread or any student doctor network, thread, you'll see that this is feverishly talked about and that we have a broken system right now. So.
No, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. But and just to expand on that, I do see a fair share of skeptics on LinkedIn, actually, and posts saying that this buzz in health tech is just really a lot of toxic positivity. It won't really share or just solve real world problems like health disparities or, just the grassroots level health literacy problems and serve, maybe vulnerable or underserved communities, because not only is their health literacy rate low, but then their digital health literacy rate is low as well. So where does technology come in there? What part can clinicians like ourselves who have stepped into this space? And I'm so glad that you mentioned risk-taking. Clinicians like to play it safe. We're not trained to do businesses. We're not trained to sort of step out of the clinical setting, so to speak. And so I actually view you, Raji and Linda and so many other clinician entrepreneurs as serving patients, but in a more nuanced, in a more newer way. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll share with you that I'm still seeing patients. I still see patients in my private practice 2 days a week. And I think about, as we're developing our application, our virtual reality patient application at House Call VR, I think about my patients. I think about my patients who have had diabetes, for example, just one example, that's not the only place we'll be. But I think about when they're looking at a potential amputation, I think about what that must be like for them. I also think about them 20 years ago and the new patients that I see that are newly diagnosed and all the ways that we can intervene to avoid that endpoint. And being a clinician allows me to see that not just in retrospect, but today, this week, I see patients that have been diagnosed and have not had the education that they need. So that health literacy piece is right in my face all the time. The second piece is the clinical implementation. I'm working in a clinic. I'm busy. I have patients in waiting rooms. I have staff that's busy. And I'm trying to make it through my day just like many other clinicians. So having the opportunity to imagine clinical workflow and clinical implementation is really a benefit for us. And then thirdly, in our clinic, we see all patients, all ages, all insurances, and except no insurances as well. So there's no insurances that we don't accept. And that's intentional, because we really do believe that everyone deserves care. And to that end, designing content and interfaces that are available for everyone and not designed for just people of certain means is incredibly important. Also, leveraging tools that are out there, including, for example, the PMAT format, which encourages patient educational material to be held to the highest standards to create our content. So leveraging all of those pieces to make sure that we're creating a benefit for as many people as we can. And then last piece is to create that bridging technology. You know, we were talking about earlier, Maida, that we can't just create content for people who have virtual reality goggles, but actually creating content that is cross technology. So having at House Call VR, we're working to have a virtual reality experience in a clinic that's educational, but then for a patient to have access to that same content in two dimensions on their phone so that they can take it home and show it to their family and can continue that educational process.
Perfect. I think we can have an entirely different episode for content. But Raji, do you want to expand on that? Oops, I think Raji is...
When it comes to starting to lag up, can you guys hear?
Okay, so I think you're experiencing some technical glitches. We're almost at time. Just something that I ask my guests before they go. Raji, I hope you're able to fix that. I think he's joining again. But Linda, I'm just going to ask you, where do you see healthcare in 10 years?
Where do I see healthcare in 10 years? I love that question. I want to see a place where patients are not left to their own devices when facing a potentially devastating diagnosis. All too often, we see people who are given diagnosis and then given maybe a brochure, most of the time not, and then left to their own devices to go and find the information. So in 10 years, I would like to see a healthcare system that values patient education, values health literacy, values preventative medicine, and sees this. We know this works. We know that prevention really is the key. You know, that's been proven over and over. We just haven't put the resources into it. So in 10 years, I would like technologies to be able to be leveraged for that goal.
Awesome. And I hope Raji joins back because I do want to hear his thoughts on this as well. And I also hope that some of the common challenges that we see in the developing world and the developed nations, whether it's, you know, patient safety, concerns around guardrails, patient security, and all of that, I hope that we sort of get all the stakeholders working together and, you know, form an interoperable sort of healthcare ecosystem, bridge that gap between the public and the private sector. I think there's a lot going on there as well. So, you know, I just hope that we make strides in that department. Health literacy, again, something that I'm very passionate about as well. I just think there's so much room and appetite for inclusive content as well. And so just to ensure that neurodivergent people have the same access to content, ensure that people like minorities have the same access to content. But thank you so much for your time, Linda. I don't think Raji is going to be able to join, but just before we go, I'm going to play a quick video about what Pulse 360 is about. And thank you everyone for tuning in. Until next time, bye-bye.